Mark Collier here with Fort Thomas Matters Radio. We are sponsored by Omega Processing Solutions. Omega Processing Solutions on Alexandria Pike, right next to Anita's. If you are a small business and you have credit card payment solutions, gift card, loyalty cards, anything like that, please call them. They are a stalwart in our community, and we certainly thank them for being our sponsors here on Fort Thomas Matters Radio. Today we're going to talk about the VA homes and where we are now, where we will have to go to get them developed the way that they need to be developed. And I've got two guests with me here today. Mark Ramler, our partner at Mansion Hill Properties, which is a real estate investment group. They do the majority of their work on the east side of Newport, but similar homes to the VA home. So we're going to talk to Mark. We also have Joe Clare with us, who's the manager of real estate finance and investments at the Catalytic Fund. They do a lot of their work. Their scope is mainly in Covington, but they cover Ludlow, Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, and they provide financing assistance for developers. So Joe's expertise in talking about how to get this financed and get this deal working to where these homes are going to be restored to their glory. He's going to be able to provide some good insight on that. Mark, we're going to start with you. And you have been quoted in a lot of the articles throughout, you know, Fort Thomas Matters, River City News, Inquirer. And the reason for that is you have a lot of your education in historic preservation. I've looked at your book at Camp Springs and a lot of the historical homes there. And you do this for a living. So I guess what I want to ask you as a developer, does this project, first of all, does it interest you?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, thank you, Mark, for having us here today. You know, I have been obsessed with these houses since I was 5 years old and we would go to Tower Park. It's like, this is an incredible asset to the city of Fort Thomas. And, you know, they're listed on the National Register of Historic Places and they're one of a kind. And, you know, I'm just salivating at the idea of being able to work on some of these homes. But the way that it's currently set up and the way the city's been going about it just isn't really feasible for a lot of developers, because they're looking for a single developer to do the whole project.
And that's outlined in the memo, a memorandum of understanding that was cultivated with the VA over 10 years ago. So this is not something that, I guess when people ask, you know, why can't these homes just be sold individually, that's the main reason why. You go through, you know, hoops that you got to jump through with the VA, yeah. And you change anything with anything. You change a period in the memo. You've got to get it changed. That's another 6 months. So that is the main reason why these homes cannot be sold individually right now. Now, as a developer, did you look at the feasibility of bidding on the homes? Right now, the city's asking $900,000.
Right.
Did Mansion Hill Properties look at the feasibility of doing that?
No, we could not take on a project of this size. We could maybe do 2, 3, or 4 of the homes, so we couldn't do all 15 of them, because there's 15 homes there to do.
And Mansion Hill is a small to mid-sized development firm. There's some bigger ones out there, but you're not alone in saying that, you know, this is too big of a project for one developer.
No, there's several other developers out there that I've talked with that would be interested in working together and, you know, cutting this down into pieces. But it's going to take a bigger entity such as the city of Fort Thomas to actually put on a developer hat, maybe hire it out to a third party and, you know, slice this project up in a way and add incentives to make it possible.
So let's say that, and the city has said explicitly, the city of Fort Thomas does not want to be a developer. Mark Ramler, Mansion Hill Properties, is this project going to work if the city does not take on that developer status?
No.
No.
No, I don't think so. Because they're looking for a singular developer out there to do the whole project, which is not feasible. And it's time for the city to, you know, put more stake into this. Actually, agree to do the infrastructure or cover part of the abatement or just incentivize the deal, because the acquisition cost and the abatement that's going to go into this is way too high, and it's too much of a risk for one developer to do.
Yeah, and I think that's probably some of the unknowns that you talk in your job a lot, Joe, at the Catalytic Fund. Now, talk about what you do at the Catalytic Fund for those that don't know.
Sure. The Catalytic Fund, we're a sort of real estate finance agency and real estate development services organization that has worked in Covington, Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, and Ludlow, Kentucky. We focus on the River City urban areas, so we don't even actually cover all of Covington or Newport. We just focus on the census tracts closest to the river. And we're really trying to do urban redevelopments, you know, kind of in line with what you see in Over the Rhine or, in a lot of cities around the country where you have a really strong urban core. By reinvesting in those vacant lots and those underutilized buildings and, you know, those buildings that maybe have been vacant and deteriorating for a long time, similar to these VA homes.
So I guess some of the projects that some people in Northern Kentucky might know, the one that you just did that I pass almost every day, the Kentucky Career Center on mm-hmm. Madison Avenue in Covington, that was a $4.8 million project. There's another one right down the street from that, is that the Life Learning Center in Covington, at $4 million, the Mutual Building in Covington, 2.6. So obviously the scope of the projects that the Catalytic Fund does not encompass Fort Thomas. It's not a city that typically has that urban renaissance or that need for urban renaissance. But let's say that it did, okay?
Absolutely.
Let's say that the Catalytic Fund came in, you looked at the VA homes. What kind of financing that is currently not on the table might something that the Catalytic Fund look at doing to get this done, to bring developers together and start construction?
Well, a lot of the deals that you mentioned, the Kentucky Career Center, the Life Learning Center, those were all involved. We were heavily involved in a property swap in that case. It wasn't so much financing on our end, but really helping to kind of consult with a couple of different property owners, organizations, and the city and the county to kind of bring a lot of people under one roof, get the conversation going, and actually make the deal happen. Now, on the Mutual Building, which is located at the corner of Pike and Madison, right in the middle of downtown Covington, it's a big white building that's pretty recognizable. If you drive past it, it's hard to miss. That building was actually purchased by the city of Covington. So it was actually owned by the city, similar to the VA homes. But unfortunately, the development itself really couldn't support the $2.5 million price tag. It really could only support about a $1.5 million. So, it was up to the city, up to us and the developer, which is actually commercial development, to look at how do we fill that gap of $1 million. The city thought this was a project that it needed to preserve, it needed to happen, similar to the VA homes. It was something that was right in the middle of the community, and they really viewed it as an asset. So we had to bring a lot of different things to the table. In the case of the Mutual Building, the city actually gave a purchase money mortgage for the building to the developer, actually commercial, and they also provided a grant that helped subsidize a lot of that development cost. In addition to that, they have a primary loan, a loan with us at the Catalytic Fund, and also have a grant from Duke Energy and some historic tax credits that are coming in from the state and the federal government.
Well, it seems like what you're saying is what happened was the city of Covington recognized that this is something that needed to be done, mm-hmm. and they put skin in the game.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I think Mark is saying, that the city of Fort Thomas, do you feel like they're not putting skin in the game? What do you feel? Obviously, you've had conversations with maybe Don Martin or Debbie Buckley. What do you think their mindset is right now?
I feel like they haven't been asked to put skin in the game yet. But after taking it out to bid two times and not having any developers step up to take on the project, we need to look at this in a different way.
I guess, as a developer, what would be an ideal situation for you? And then, Joey, I guess what we can do is Let's look at it from Mark's perspective as a developer, and then whatever his ideal situation is, let's see if we can make that work on your end. So what's your ideal situation as a developer? How do you get this done?
Well, I think first of all, the city would need to you know, break the project up into smaller pieces that are more manageable for smaller developers, because I think they're going to get a much better product at the end and make it more manageable for some of the small guys to do. Now, you know, the asking price for these homes is, you know, it doesn't seem unreasonable, but by the time you're adding the infrastructure and the abatement and everything in there, you're looking at over $160,000 plus per home before you even start to redevelop.
The city right now is asking $900,000. And that was one of the things that they changed from 2011 when they didn't get any bids in 2011. They asked developers what was an obstacle. You have to get in under $1 million. So right now they're at $900,000.
Right. And still, even with that price tag, you know, the first thing we do when we look at properties to buy for Mansion Hill Properties, it's like we have to look at the acquisition price and what you're going to have to put into it, what you can get out at the end of it. And it's that simple. It's like if the city's willing to step in there, run the infrastructure, pay for part of the abatement process, then I think it would be a lot more feasible for any developer to take it on. I mean, this is something that needs to be moved to... it needs to be a priority for the city of Fort Thomas, because I think everyone agrees how significant this is and how these homes can't be torn down.
You know, it's to that point where, you know, at least I take the temperature of the residents in Fort Thomas.
Right.
It's almost like they're so exacerbated with the process that some people do say, just tear the things down. And obviously in the memo that, it states directly,
well,
you can't do
they
that.
They can't do that because they're listed on the National Register of Historic Places,
right,
and they're owned by the federal government essentially right now. So you cannot tear them
you
down.
You cannot tear them down.
You can, if it goes on another 10 or 20 years, they'll eventually fall down, but we don't want to see that happen.
And that is absolutely the worst case scenario, correct?
Right.
So, Joe, the situation that Mark is outlining, let's hypothetically say that the city allows that to happen. What's the next step?
Well, I would agree that, you know, the city really does need to take on some sort of development role. I would probably structure it maybe even having the city become a partner in the process, not as the master developer necessarily, but actually bringing in a master developer and doing some kind of profit sharing model where they could have a master developer that comes in and manages the project, mm-hmm, and then distributes those individual homes to individual developers or home builders. You see a similar process happening down in Manhattan Harbor and Dayton, Kentucky, where, you know, we have a David and Bowden who's come in and set up all the land there, put in all the infrastructure, is now selling lots to individual home builders. I think that's really kind of the same thing Mark's talking about. But I think what people really fail to think about is these aren't just 15 abandoned homes. This is an abandoned neighborhood that has infrastructure costs. You know, the roads aren't probably in the best shape. They might not shed water correctly. There's storm sewers that probably need to be replaced. And I'm absolutely positive that there's no way that the sanitary sewers are still in good condition.
They're not.
No.
And to even just quick example, to run water down there, they're going to have to run a water line all the way from South Fort Thomas Avenue, which is probably about a half mile all the way down. That's just one cost.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Mark, you can talk about this. Rightly so. I mean, the city and the developers, there's a ton of unknowns out there.
Right.
And I guess, talk about that.
And as, you know, as much as the city does not want to be a developer, they're going to have to be a developer in some aspect. You know, they can hire it out to a third party to develop, to manage infrastructure, but they're going to have to do it.
So it sounds like everybody's on the same page here that, you know, best case scenario, if everybody lived in a perfect world right now, the city would buy the homes from the VA and sell them directly to a developer at an asking price that everybody's happy with.
Right.
But in this market, with the way that the homes have deteriorated over the last 10 to 15 years, that doesn't seem likely unless you have somebody that comes in that wants to do this for a legacy and not a profit.
And that's
good
hard
luck
to find in the open market.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had three developers that at the beginning of this process in 2011 that submitted letters of interest. One was Ashley Holmes and Billy Christians.
Mm-hmm.
The other was Mick Kennedy. I'm blanking on his company's name. But Mick was the one that actually said, you know, pretty frankly, this is not going to happen unless you find somebody like Bill Gates that wants to come in and do it. Now, it's funny that he mentioned that because the third person that submitted a letter of interest was David Jose. And David Jose is for Thomas. He's, you know, in legacy building mode. And if that were to happen, I could maybe see that happening. Probably not, but it's a pipe dream is what that's going to come down to. Right. So it seems like everybody's on the same page. If this, if these are important to the city, and everybody seems to say that they are, the only way to do this is to get the city to step up, put some skin in the game, become a pseudo-developer, I'm doing air quotes now, and bring in multiple developers to spread that risk. Yes?
Yes, I agree with that.
I would agree, yeah.
Okay. What else are we missing, Mark?
I think we covered it all.
Joe?
Yeah, like we said, the abating the risk for the private sector is really the role that the government has to play here, and it's going to be hard to get done with this big of a project, that big of an asking price, and that many variables floating out there.
For Mark Ramler and Joe Clare, Mark Ramler, again, you can find him at Mansion Hill Properties. What's your website and your phone number, Mark?
MansionHillProperties.com, and phone is 859-466-0243.
Make sure you check out some of the Facebook page pictures that Mark has on his Mansion Hill Properties pages. He has absolutely done wonders with some of the homes on the east side of Newport. Homes that are in way worse condition. I mean, if you go on there, like his page, and kind of scroll through the befores and afters, you're going to be amazed. And Joe Clare from the Catalytic Fund. Joe, what's your website, if any?
We are online on Facebook as the Catalytic Fund and also at www.thecatalyticfund.com.
Mark Ramler, Joe Clare, thank you very much. For Thomas Matters Radio, we'll be back. For Thomas Matters Radio, Mark Collier here in the Palatial Studios in the For Thomas Matters studios in Fort Thomas. Brought to you by Omega Processing Solutions. Did you know that one of the nation's top-rated merchant processing companies calls Fort Thomas home? Omega Processing Solutions has an A+ Better Business Bureau rating, has been selected to be a member of the BBB's Leadership Circle of Companies. Let Omega, if you're a small business, help you with your credit and debit card processing, mobile payments, gift cards, reward programs, and business funding needs. You can give them a call at 442-8100 or visit them at www.omegap.com for more information. We talked about the VA homes with Mark Ramler and Joe Clare of the Catalytic Fund. What we're going to do now is kind of talk about some issues that are percolating in Fort Thomas. There has been quite a bit of newsworthy related items, whether that be the suspect that was just charged in the bomb threat, terroristic threatening case at Highlands High School. Some crime issues have cropped up in town. Things to that nature. What I'm going to start with now is something that I don't typically talk about too much. I generally, when these types of things happen, I really don't put it out there for media consumption or for public consumption. But this story is pretty newsworthy in that it's just very bizarre that it happened in Fort Thomas. This happened in, I think it was late November. A homeowner was having a party at a house off of Miami Parkway, which is off of Riverside, which is off of North Fort Thomas, and had smelled a foul stench coming from their wooded area. He had thought that maybe some hunters had gone down into his property, onto his property, and had hunted and subsequently dressed a deer down on his property. Miami Parkway backs up to Route 8. So it was late at night when he had smelled that, got up the next morning to investigate in his property. He was actually chopping wood down in the woods. He's got 11 acres, which butt up against Route 8. So he had gone down to see what was going on, wanted to see where the deer had smelled was coming from. What he found was a corpse. It was a male that had been hanging from a tree. The body was found November the 14th. The coroner had come out and had found that this person had been hanging there since September the 2nd. So September, October, November, he had been there, was his estimated date of death. The coroner had found that he had died of asphyxiation from hanging. It was apparently a seat belt that had been cut out from a car, and it was ruled a suicide. This person was a Guatemalan national, 28-year-old mechanic laborer, lived in Newport, doesn't have much family in the area, does have a brother who was able to talk to us, but declined to kind of give some comments on what had happened. But it was just a really strange incident that happened that is one of those things where you kind of hesitate to talk about it, but it's kind of, at this point, people know about it to a certain extent. So it's not something that we're groundbreaking here by any means. It's just one of those things where it needs to be talked about, I guess. It needs to be brought up in the public spectrum. Certainly a sad story that came out, but wanted to put a stop to any, I guess I had heard, you know, you hear things in my position at Fort Thomas Matters that, you know, is this really a suicide or is more, there is more to the story. And the reason for bringing it up is there is no more to the story. It was a suicide. The brother had, you know, confirmed that was the case. There was no foul play involved. The Fort Thomas police have kind of put an end to that. That's the reason for bringing this up. But it's certainly a bizarre situation. But we did want to address it. The other bit of news that had come out as far as crime goes in Fort Thomas is the trial of Fort Thomas Highlands prom king, 21-year-old Tyler Swope, who was recently pled guilty to calling in the bomb threat. Charges were terroristic, threatening, and making a false report. He was sentenced earlier this week by Judge Fred Stein. Certainly a sad situation. Tyler, by all means, seemed to be very well liked. He had a lot of different character witnesses, well-known people throughout the Fort Thomas community that spoke on his behalf. Speaking with people that within the community that knew him to be a great guy. And I don't think throughout the course of the trial even, and they talked to Tyler, they had Tyler on the stand, they had a clinical psychologist from UC on the stand, had some of people that knew Tyler in high school. The one question that was never answered was, why did he do this? And I think throughout the course of the testimony, Tyler said he didn't even know why he did this. It was completely out of character. Seemingly a really bright, smart, diverse kid. Highland's principal, Brian Robinson, was asked to come in by the prosecution, and he had testified to the fact that of the hundreds, if not thousands, of kids that he interacted with throughout his 8 years of being a principal and certainly much longer than that being an educator at Highlands, that Tyler was one of his top five favorite kids that he had come into contact with. Described him as an underdog, described him as very helpful, coming in during the summer when he wasn't even asked to come in to help secretaries, custodians, doing what, you know, most kids wouldn't do. And it's a sad story because it seems like he made one mistake and it is going to affect him for the rest of his life. Now, Judge Stein said it a few times throughout the trial, this is not the end of his life. He can make more of his life, and God help him, I hope he does. He had a large contingent of family and friends throughout the trial there to support him. Seems like a great kid that just made a terrible mistake. And, I don't know. I don't know if the sentence was a just one or not. He ended up getting 6 months in prison, or the Campbell County Detention Center. So he will stay local. He also got 500 hours of community service. Got 150 of those. He will go out and speak to high school age kids to kind of, be a cautionary tale to them. Whether, these types of, I don't know where the subject matter is going to come from other than the fact that these small mistakes that you make as a young person can affect you for the rest of your life. And it is going to affect Tyler. He wanted to be somebody in the army or police or fire, somebody in a position of trust, and it's going to be real difficult for him to do that now. As tough as it is to see a young person go through this in your community, maybe it'll help somebody down the road. And I think Tyler's attorney, Phil Tolliver, said it best is, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. So we wish the best to Tyler and his family, and certainly they'll hopefully get through this together. For Thomas Matters Radio, once again, brought to you by Omega Processing Solutions. Not sure you want to change to your current processor? There's no pressure. They have no contracts, no early termination fees. There's nothing to lose, and there's lots to gain. They are the sole advertiser of Fort Thomas Matters Radio. Give them a call if you're a small business owner, 859-442-8100. That's 859-442-8100. The next time you will join us at Fort Thomas Matters Radio, we're going to talk about the Brent Spence Bridge and hopefully have somebody on from Build Our Bridge Now and NKY United. They are dueling coalitions. One is obviously anti-tolling. The other one is pro-bridge. It seems like those are their words. They're not pro tolling. I think they want a new bridge and whatever funding mechanism is there to get that done. That's what they are pro. So we will have somebody on from both contingents. So make sure to check into that. You can always download our podcast at FortThomasMatters.podbean.com, or go to iTunes and search Fort, F-O-R-T, Fort Thomas Matters. For Thomas Matters Radio, this is Mark Collier signing off.